Welcome to Stopgap Talks, your go-to podcast for expert insights into the marketing, digital, creative, and research recruitment landscape. With over 30 years of experience, our consultants are here to share the wisdom, strategies, and success stories that can transform your hiring or career journey. If you enjoy the episode, don't forget to subscribe, share, and leave a review to help others find us. Now let's dive in to the latest episode of Stopgap Talks.
Hi, and welcome to Stopgap Talks. I'm Ro Lawrence, the Director of People and Values here at Stopgap, and today I'm joined with our founder, Claire Owen. Claire began Stopgap 33 years ago with no recruitment experience at all, but wanting to challenge the industry's reputation for bad practice and poor candidate care. So, morning, Claire. Welcome.
Morning. Thank you for inviting me to join you.
I'm looking forward to our chat. So today we're actually going to be reflecting on the recruitment landscape in 2024, the changes, challenges, and our hopes and wishes for 2025. So if you're ready, Claire, and I've got a few questions lined up for you, so we'll just crack on.
Yeah, rock and roll.
Perfect. So as we're now stepping into 2025, what do you believe will be the biggest challenges and opportunities for marketing recruitment, both, you know, from the perspective for hiring managers and for job seekers?
Gosh, you know, I suppose everybody's hoping that that 2025 is going to be a bit better than 2024 was. Yeah. It was a really tough year. It was a really tough year for Stopgap. It was a tough year for candidates, and actually I think a tough year for clients, where they had headcount freezes. So I often say I wish I had a crystal ball, and sadly mine is still a bit murky. It's been murky for the last few years, but I think there are some signs. There was that the market might pick up. I think maybe for the for maybe some of the SMEs out there, there was quite an interesting bit of research done by KPMG, where actually I think 92% of their people they surveyed, which was SMEs, were positive about next year, which I was really surprised to read, but really, really good to read. I think Aviva joined in on that, and I think about 87% of the people that they had surveyed, again, similar SMEs, were positive about the outlook. But I think you know, the challenge is there are more candidates than there are jobs. So I think for clients, you know, there are masses of candidates that they've got to sift through. I mean, sometimes people can be advertising a job and they'll be, I mean, goodness, you know, it could be 500 applicants, and you know, with the best will in the world, to be make sure that you find the absolute gem in that 500 is a huge challenge. Absolutely. So I think, you know, the challenge for clients is sifting through the candidates to make sure that they don't miss a good one. And I think what that leads to is it leads to what I describe as cookie cutter recruitment, because if you have got a mass of applicants, then it's just easy just to replace the person if it's a replacement, just to get somebody else similar to that you've had before. It's easy. If you're recruiting into financial services, you just recruit somebody with financial services experience, or if you're FMCG or tech or whatever it might be. So I think that the challenge is they might be able to do the job, but are they the best person for the job? I think the other challenge when in a tough market is that is the internal talent teams. More clients are using internal talent teams to do their recruitment. Which I understand why they're doing it. They see it as a cost saving. That the problem for marketing is quite a lot of these internal talent teams are not maybe as au fait as with marketing terminology as if it was a line manager. So again, I just think it's the risk of missing out on actually the best candidates. Yeah. I think from a candidate perspective, until the market really picks up, they do have to be quick off the mark. And I think one of the hardest things is for candidates to learn how to be resilient, because there is job seeking fatigue and rejection fatigue. You know, you just as a candidate, if you are constantly applying and typically, and I'll come on to this maybe a bit later, but not getting a response from the client. And if you are, if you do get a response, it being a negative response. So it's really important for candidates in a market that isn't as good as it has been in the past to have their own ways of dealing with that. So I would always say to people that if you are job hunting, you have to treat it like a permanent job, and you have to be disciplined about it. And I would say that that they need to just make sure they get 2 good applications off a day, because just bombarding, hitting easy apply, long term, I think it's going to be more detrimental to them. So I think the one thing I would also say is that a challenge, which is about going back to the clients being able to find the right people, is to be really clear on what they need, because I've seen so many job descriptions that are just they're bland, they're just nothing. They are literally, it's the marketing manager job description that the hiring manager has picked out of the file because it's the one they have for marketing managers. But a marketing manager or a marketing assistant, whatever it is, that's needed today might be very different to what was required last year. Yeah. And the other thing, just whilst I'm talking about job descriptions, it is, I liken a job description as the opposite side of the candidate's CV. So clients need to really think about what it is they need, keep the job descriptions on point, and don't think that you have to cover absolutely everything. I have seen four page job descriptions which just send everybody to sleep. So I think that if in this market where there are a lot of candidates, they need to be very clear what they're looking for, in a hope that that might ensure that the right candidates are applying for the jobs.
Thanks. I mean, what you've just said there resonates obviously to me as a people professional, working in small businesses. It's so hard to know very technical roles that I might be hiring for, as you say. And you really do miss those candidates that are out there. So I completely can understand that. And those stats you mentioned earlier were obviously promising in terms of positivity and optimism out there.
So it was really good to read that. And I hope very much that that will happen.
So how can StopGap add unique value in navigating these shifts?
Well, I think the where we add the value is for us candidates are not just a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is always the value that we add, is that when somebody says we want to help, we need to recruit a digital marketing assistant, then they're not wanting a robot, they're wanting a human being. And for me, the number one value add is that we make sure that the people that are presented to the client are not only on point in terms of their technical capabilities, but they're on point in terms of the personality, because personality, the dynamics of a marketing team are absolutely critical. So one, we can do that. Two, I think when we don't do cookie cutter recruitment, and that's what clients have said to us time and again. It's like, gosh, I would never have thought that person with property marketing experience was going to be right for me in my dental practice business, but their skills were transferable. So I think one of the things we always pride ourselves in is understanding about the transferability of skills. So I think it's being able to find candidates that are not just the cookie cutter, so bring some different industry expertise into the business. It's the personality piece, and it's just saving time. I mean, at the end of the day, trying to go through the volume of candidate applications until the market picks up. I'm sure it will, but until it picks up, then it is saving the clients time and therefore money in filtering through the CVs.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know, wouldn't it, actually, the amount of time internal talent teams spend trying to find a candidate and the cost of that to a business versus paying for a expert to help them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously, you know, the marketing landscape is ever changing, as we've seen over the past few years, and continuing to do so, obviously, with technology and consumer behaviour driving new demands. What trends do you foresee shaping the roles hiring managers will be recruiting in 2025?
Obviously, the first thing has got to be we are living in a digital age.
Yeah.
And the prediction is that about 75% of the global advertising revenue will be digital advertising. I mean, that is such it is such a change. But I don't think that means that everybody's got to be a digital guru. Mm-hmm. I think that every marketeer has to understand the elements of digital marketing. But I had a candidate the other day with a very, 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 very good sort of head of marketing, and her marketing, her CMO, was saying, I think you should move into a performance marketing role, because that's where it's all about the analysis, it's all about understanding the performance marketing within this digital space. And she said, I don't want to do that. She said, because my expertise is in brand. I understand brand. I understand strategy. And so although you would think that to future-proof her career, a step into digital marketing or performance marketing would be the right thing. Yeah. But she said, at the end of the day, I could do it, but it doesn't play to my strengths. Mm. So I think that everybody has to have an awareness of the digital landscape, but I don't think people need to panic about becoming digital gurus, because marketing is more than marketing is more the digital piece is the end piece. Yeah, well, the digital piece is the end comms piece, but it's also, I suppose, in some ways, it's also the front. It's partly feeds into the front end, the strategy, because if you get the data, which is collected from all the digital activity, that data allows you to understand your consumers better. And then that then feeds into that this candidate who would then be working on the strategy and the creative piece. So I think definitely an awareness, but not be paranoid that if you haven't done a digital marketing qualification, you're going to be out of a job. But the other thing I would say is that people do need to get their heads out of the sand as far as AI. it is here to stay. It is in all of its guises incredibly powerful. I think within the marketing space, I think there will be a growth of AI roles. I'm not necessarily talking about the techie, you know, the writing of the AI related programs, but I'm talking about how businesses integrate AI into their day-to-day business. And I think, you know, over the last 10 years, people have talked about digital transformation. Yeah. And I know my prediction, my little crystal ball, which I say is a bit cloudy, but my crystal ball will say that over the next 12 to 24 months, we'll see clients, marketing teams especially, talking about AI integration.
Yeah,
that's going to be the new buzzword. So I think understanding the role that AI can play in marketing is very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think, is there anything that marketing professionals can prepare to meet some of these expectations, you know, with regards to AI, for example, anything they can be doing?
Well, do you know what? I think a lot of it is actually just using it yourself.
Yeah.
I know that's the real basic level. You know, if you had to, you know, write a leaving speech or a birthday message or an email, you know, an email to a prospective client. I think using people just understanding it themselves will you know, allow them to potentially see the opportunities. I mean, I think there's, you know, unquestionably the writing piece of AI is so powerful. It is so powerful. I know someone would say the other day that it's obviously incredibly powerful in the whole research space.
Yes.
But I think marketeers have got to just start to use it themselves on a personal level. to open their minds and up to what it can do on a professional level.
Yeah, absolutely. To understand that opportunity there, absolutely.
Yeah.
And obviously, you've just touched on, you've talked about in detail there about, you know, AI and automation. But of course, that is also becoming more prevalent in the recruitment space. Mm. So how do you feel and see this, you know, the human element that we've talked about as, you know, a big part of Stopgap, a big part of recruitment, remaining critical in, you know, identifying and placing the right talent for creative and marketing roles?
Yeah, I think it's quite scary, if I'm honest, you know, that the reliance on, I'm going to say, technology to select potential employees. I mean, it's been around for years, Ro, in a different guise. I mean, the big corporates have been using technology. They've been using questionnaires and to select their shortlist of candidates. But I'm sure it has a role to play, but at the end of the day, it can't replace this human piece. And I think what we have to understand is, you know, what Stopgap does, we're in the marketing space. Yeah. So marketing is all about, at the end of the day, you're marketing to people. Yeah. You are marketing your product to a person or a business to buy your product. And I think the personality piece is so critical. In fact, I think it's really important for team dynamics. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, you've worked in businesses where the team dynamics have been so positive, and that the productivity of that team has been a lot greater than the productivity of a team who spend their time whinging and moaning about somebody they don't like in their team, their boss or whatever. Yeah, and that I don't believe that AI would ever replace you or me, sitting in front of somebody and actually thinking, gosh, you know, they're technically brilliant. Their industry experience is phenomenal, but gosh, I really can't see them working effectively with so and so or so and so. And one of the things that we started to explore, and I hope that we will do it more in this year, is some sort of a personality profiling and understanding that the yin and the yang. So I've worked with people who are very much like me, who are what I classify myself as a monkey, and I jump from branch to branch and I start things and never finish them. Yeah. And actually, you know, if there were too many of me in a team, it'd be a disaster. Nothing would ever get done. Yeah. So actually, even though somebody else might be absolutely brilliant, they think, well, actually, if they're going to work with Claire, they're too much like a monkey like her. So, you know, let's find somebody who isn't a monkey. So I think that's what you can glean. I think the other thing I'm going to say is for somebody to be really, truly effective in their role, they have to really love what they're doing.
Yeah,
they've got to be motivated. So just because somebody might be able to do a job doesn't mean to say they're going to be great at doing the job. And actually, you asked me the question earlier about what Stopgap can bring to the table. Well, one of the things that we always do is understand the candidate's motivation. What is really important to them? And it might be material things. It might be money. It might be this. It might be location. It might be working hours. It might be the number of people in the team, whatever it might be. We understand that, we interrogate that, which means that we put somebody in the role that is going to make them happy. And if they are happy in a role, they will be much more productive and much more effective.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing I would add here about the AI piece as well, as you said, it can't sort of bring that CV to life. You know, if businesses are trying to build perhaps more diverse teams, or looking outside that cookie cutter, the automation of just picking out words off a CV isn't going to allow for that type of, you know, diversity of thinking, diversity of approach, you know, none of that side of things. So it's cutting it down, or it's limiting your candidate pool, I think, a lot more as well.
True. I suppose the only thing that the counter to that, row, which could be an interesting one to explore, is that, you know, you talk about diversity, and, you know, and I was having a conversation with somebody the other day about, you know, more mature workers and how they feel that actually they are overlooked. So potentially, you know, using an AI tool, which actually it isn't, it ignores all of that, could be good to ensure that. And I do have a thing about, you know, I do hope that more and more people are open their minds to the brilliance that somebody can bring to the table, who might not, we talk about cookie cutter, who might not look the same, might not, you know, as the other people in the team. But I remember recruiting somebody once for a client, and they were, it was an agency, and she was in her 50s. And they wanted a senior account manager. And I said, oh, you must have this person. They were, oh, no, she's far too old. She's going to want much bigger and better things. And I said, no, she doesn't want to do anything more than be a brilliant senior account manager. Yeah. Anyway, they took her on a freelance basis, and she ended up staying there permanently for about 7 years.
Yeah,
and it's just about, you know, people can be very blinkered mm-hmm. when they recruit. And actually, that's another thing you said about what we can bring to the table. Yeah. You know, what we see is that we understand that she might be 50 years old, but she doesn't want to be an account director or a marketing director or a head of marketing. She wants to be a brilliant brand manager.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Yeah. So don't think because somebody has more experience that they want to keep climbing the career ladder.
Yeah, such many people don't. Easy trap to fall into, isn't it? And you can dismiss many great candidates. Agree. Obviously, we're, you know, very, very close to the end of 2024 now. So looking in ahead into 2025, what are your hopes and ambitions for the marketing recruitment industry and Stopgap?
Oh, well, number one, that they see the value that we can bring to the table. I think we've covered off quite a lot of those things. I mean, you know, obviously, I'm a bit biased, but there is no question about the fact that we can, I believe we can unearth candidates that they might struggle to unearth themselves. We're meeting people all the time. And so it's not just about just for this one particular role. Actually, the other thing that I hope is that they understand that the value that a good recruiter like Stopgap can bring to the party is the fact that we protect the employer's brand. You know, it appalls me and makes me so sad that we see that clients, because they don't have the capacity to respond to every applicant, you know, they receive these 500 applicants or 120 or even 60 applicants, and they never bother to say thank you Ro, for applying for the job. You know, unfortunately, you haven't been successful this time. We do that for everybody. And it's you know, understanding those things, that aspect of the protecting the employer's brand that we bring to the table, that's more than just, you know, it's more than just thinking, oh, I'm going to save some money. Well, you're actually maybe potentially going to save your employer brand,
your reputation,
your brand reputation, which is critical. So I think you know, We can find different candidates. We can save them time because they're only going to be looking at four or five candidates, all of whom have been vetted, met, you know, and are absolutely committed to excited about the role that's on the table. So please, I hope that more people will be using us and understand the value that we can bring to the table.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And in terms of sort of the ways in which agencies, hiring managers and candidates all collaborate to achieve, you know, their goals, are there any changes that you would like to see there in how that collaboration happens?
I think one of the things that I think clients could be better at is the whole interview piece.
Okay.
So I'm not sure this answers your question in terms of collaboration, but I think if the goal is that I want to make sure that I get the very best person for my marketing team, then having a more structured interview, which we can help with because we do it ourselves, you know, if you know what you are looking for in your ideal candidate, then ensure that questions are asked to determine whether the candidates that you're meeting have those skill set. So I think one, and it doesn't mean to make it more formal. It's just more structured. It allows the individual making the decisions to compare apples with apples. So that's number one thing. And actually, this is maybe a sort of bit more practical. Is that the other thing that I'd love to see is in organizations giving their line managers interview training, because the whole candidate experience, can be incredibly stressful when they're job hunting. And a lot of candidates are asked to jump through hoops through the interview process. That's one thing that causes some stress. But they've psyched themselves up, they've prepared for the interview, they've spent time preparing, they go for the interview, and they're interviewed by a line manager who spends three quarters of the interview talking and doesn't actually glean anything from them. And the candidate comes away feeling incredibly deflated. And do you know what happens? That could have been an absolutely ace candidate. And what does the ace candidate do? Think, I don't want to work for that organization. It kind of comes back to that brand reputation piece.
Absolutely.
So I'd love to see more clients understanding that it's not just about posting a job, finding some CVs, putting them in front of a line manager and making an offer. It's about getting the right person or the best person for the job.
Absolutely. That's something you've always said, isn't it? It's that perfect candidate for the role or the best candidate for the role, 100%.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Claire. Obviously, you've shared some really interesting insights and reflections and given away a lot of useful tips and hinters there. A hint? Tips and hinters? Tips and hints.
I know what you mean.
For our listeners, thanks. Before we close down, is there anything else that you would like to add that you think would be useful for our listeners to be aware of?
No, I think I've probably said it all, but I think for candidates especially, it is about being focused about the roles that you're applying for, just to avoid rejection, job application fatigue. It is very difficult to maintain your positivity and objectiveness if you are constantly being rejected, but the chances are the only reason that you were being rejected was you weren't right for the job in the first place. So I suppose my one thing for candidates in this tough market, which we hope is going to change, but until it does, is only ever apply for jobs that your CV clearly shows that you've got at least 75% of the of what's required on the job spec. That's my magic number. And if your CV doesn't match 75% of what's on the job spec, don't waste your time. And then my tip for clients is to really be very clear about what it is you're looking for, so that you get the right applicants, the right candidates applying, and then just go the next step and translate those key requirements into a more structured approach to ensure that you actually do land that brilliant candidate.
Brilliant. Thank you. That's really helpful. It's been great chatting. Thank you, Claire. And thank you so much, everyone, for tuning into today's episode. We really hope you found it helpful. If you have any thoughts or questions on this topic or anything that we've talked about, please do drop them in the comments. We'd love to hear from you. And don't forget to like, share and follow so we can keep this amazing community growing. Until next time, take care.